And we do have a quorum. I think perfect time for me to do my dental hygienist bill right now. Well, we'll go with House File 1745. Sorry. We got to do the minutes. Representative Emmer's been paying close attention, so he's going to move the minutes.
What? I move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. Okay. The minutes are adopted. Okay. Representative Rue moves House File 1745 and recommend a pass and refer to the Committee on Health Care and Human Service Policy and Oversight. Representative Rude.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill, it's a department bill, and I'm actually going to turn the testimony over to the department so they can walk us through the bill.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair. All of the proposals in the amendment come from the folks we regulate.
Oh, Mr. Hindlemeyer, you guys, state your name. You've been here
I'm
a while.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Tom Hindlemeyer, Director of the Health Occupations Program at the Minnesota Department of Health. All the proposals in this bill either come from the folks affected by the regulations that we administer or from department staff who see a way to make the regulations less onerous and more flexible for the licensees. Section 1 updates part of the definition of speech-language pathology so that the service description in Clause 7 is consistent with the national definition. Section 2 substitutes an audit process for required submission of continuing education course verifications. Sections 3, 4, and 5 are combine two fees that affect audiologists. The combination is revenue neutral, and it replaces two fees with one fee. Section 6 updates the definition of a licensed health care professional, and that is within the context of the occupational therapy regulations only. Section 7 clarifies and expands a little bit the definition of a limited license so that it includes another category of folks that are the subject of the changes in Section 8. In Section 8 and Section 9, what we're doing is addressing situations where folks are applying for a license or authority to use special procedures years after they've completed the training and education. And so we are putting in place or moving to impose on them the regulations that we have for folks who renew their credentials after letting them lapse for a number of years. So it's an internal consistency of the regulations and how they affect the licensees. In Section 9, we are allowing folks who have completed special coursework to use physical agent modalities to begin using those under supervision as soon as they've completed the course while we do the paperwork to issue the approval if the course has been previously approved by the commissioner. In Section 10, this concerns our licensing of food and beverage establishments where we are allowing for different renewal dates instead of a single renewal date for the licensees. And in Section 11, the same group of licensees allowing the use of decals instead of the actual paper license on their mobile units and food carts. And in Section 12, we are authorizing the department to use the most current version of the guidelines and timelines for the minimum data set when the federal government actually updates them. And in Section 13, we are repealing rules that are already are in statute and that were inadvertently not deleted when the body of the rules were deleted.
Okay.
Are there any questions about any of the particular items?
There's questions from members? I see an amendment. Is that yours, Representative Wood?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have it in front of me. It has to do with the section at the end here. There is a change, Jim, for that. The federal government changed the date to start that, so I think we're just trying to.
Yes, on page 7, line 25, the amendment would insert after the word guidelines when they are. In other words, the federal government hasn't yet issued its changes, and so we're just clarifying that when they do, we will then follow the updated version.
Yeah, sounds pretty technical. All those in favor of the referendum rule, move the AO9 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the amendment motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. To the bill as amended, members, any questions? Anyone from the public wants to testify on this? Okay, seems like none. Representative Rule removed her motion. The House File 1745 be recommended pass and be referred as amended. And be referred to the Health Human Service Policy Oversight.
Okay.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion prevails. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
And then Representative Root has moved House File 1860. Recommend to pass and be referred to the Health Human Service Policy and Oversight Committee. I'm going to establish some ground rules before we go. Representative Root is going to give the description of the bill. Then after that, we are going to we're going to do 10 minutes on each side, and then after that we'll have questions from the members, and then we'll proceed on the vote. So, Representative Root.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 1860 was brought to me by several dermatologists who had a concern about the proliferation, about the use of lasers in the area of skin and spot treatments and adverse patient outcomes. Over the years, these clinics have sprung up around the state that uses these lasers for things such as laser hair removal and other cosmetic reasons. Currently, our law states in Chapter 147.081, Subdivision 3, under the practice of medicine, defines, for purposes of this chapter, a person not exempted under Section 147.09 is, quote, practicing medicine, unquote, or engaged in the, quote, practice of medicine, unquote, if the person is doing the following. It lists four things, or several things. Number four is offers or undertakes to perform any surgical operation, including any invasive or non-invasive procedures involving the use of laser or laser-assisted device upon any person. As these lasers have developed, the technology has surpassed our policies. There are many reputable clinics using lasers across the state in a responsible manner, and I had the opportunity to tour a facility and meet with some owners. I don't know if they're here today. Oh, there they are. Okay. And they were fantastic, and I want to acknowledge that they're very, it was a really great experience. This, what you have before you represents an work that has been taking place over several months. The physicians and other the people who also have these other clinics have been trying to come together to put some sort of guidelines in place. I think everybody agrees that we need something. this, what you see before you, is we have not reached peace in the valley, as a representative Hoppy likes to say. I think both sides still have concerns about that, and I want to acknowledge that. As members know, we have deadlines, and we have to have a bill introduced so we can have a hearing by a certain date. This bill was introduced on Wednesday and reflects kind of the latest in the negotiation process. I think it's really important, even though we haven't come to final conclusion, that we have the opportunity to have this public hearing. This is the place and this is the space where we have the public policy discussion. After this bill was introduced and on the web, I'm sure a number of you began to hear from people in the community. I heard from the nurses I know who had some concerns. A colleague also brought forward some concerns, and that actually we attempted to address that in the amendment. Though, upon further reflection, we're actually not going to offer the amendment today because, with time, we've realized it's not exactly, we think it's technically not worded properly. Briefly, what I'm going to do is just really highlight the bill because I think the testifiers are all going to probably speak to the sections of the bill, and that would be a better use, I think, of the committee's time. So, Section 1 references the statute that defines the practice of medicine and seeks to expand the area that I referenced earlier. Section 2, Subdivisions 1 and 2, defines and addresses what it is, who may do it, and how they can go about doing it. Subdivision 3 talks about delegating the treatment. Subdivision 4 addresses supervision. Subdivision 5 talks about the training requirements. Subdivision 6 references quality assurance. Subdivision 7 speaks to the facilities that would provide the service, and Subdivision 8 talks about the violation of it. So with that, Mr. Chair and members, I would like to turn it over to the testifiers.
Okay. We have Ms. Perkins-Smith.
Yes, Doctor.
Dr. Perkins-Smith. Go ahead. State your name for the record and
you
may proceed.
I'm Cindy Perkins-Smith. I apologize for my voice. I sacrificed it for the Gophers last night, but obviously didn't yell loud enough, so we'll do the best we can. I know. By way of disclosures, I am a dermatologist from rural Minnesota, Wilmer, and an adjunct faculty member, professor and part-time faculty at the University of Minnesota. And I am an officer in the Minnesota Derm Society and the Minnesota Medical Association and represent both today. The Minnesota Derm Society originally began working on safety legislation for lasers after our membership reported seeing increased numbers of complications coming into their practices. Oftentimes, the complications were coming as a result of laser treatment by people who were physicians and non-physicians who were inadequately trained and experienced in using these devices. And I have brought along a packet with some photographs, and I apologize if they're graphic, but the injuries are graphic. The first section illustrates injuries from the from non-ablative lasers, primarily hair removal. They come from the American Society of Derm Surgery. The second packet is from Dr. Brian Zellickson, who practices in the Twin Cities, and those are a result of ablative procedures. And they illustrate that despite what people may tell you, that these side effects are significant. They're not insignificant. I also have a couple of articles. One of them, in particular, from Dr. Narikar, outlines a number of complications that were referred to him and his partners in practice over the course of 1 year. Basically, the most frequent complications they saw were discoloration and scarring, and the most frequent procedure done was laser for hair reduction, so it is not a procedure without risk. Even in West Central Minnesota, where the population is rural and relatively conservative, I see a number of complications from laser treatment, and they include discoloration and scarring. But probably the most significant one I've seen in my practice is when a woman who was referred to me presented with what can only be described as a 2-inch hole on her scalp that was filled with granulation tissue and basically was just a fungating, bloody mess. She had been told she was having a sebaceous cyst treated with laser. And the problem with that is you can't get sebaceous cysts on the scalp, so the diagnosis was wrong. Secondly, if that was the diagnosis, the treatment was wrong. You wouldn't treat it with a laser. Thirdly, I thought the complication was a result of the laser basically rupturing the cyst, but a biopsy indicated that it was a squamous cell carcinoma, a malignancy, a cancer invasive to skull. It required extensive surgery to remove it. And the significance in this is that this lady did not just suffer a scar as a result of her laser treatment, but she could potentially have lost her life as a result of this misdiagnosis and delayed treatment. And our members are seeing more and more and more of this. The bill that you have before you is the result of a compromise that we put forward after meeting with the Minnesota Aesthetic or no, the Metastatic Association of Aesthetic Laser Safety. We know that it's not perfect, but we hope that it gets some protection in place. I'm going to use as an example hospital credentialing. Right now, if I am legally entitled as a result of my medical license in this state to practice neurosurgery, but you wouldn't want me to. I'd be pathetic, and the results would be disastrous. Well, because most neurosurgical procedures are done in a hospital, before you can do them, you have to apply to a credentialing committee to get the privileges to do so. Well, if I apply to any hospital and ask for the privileges to do neurosurgery, they take one look at my background and say, you're nuts, and would decline to allow me to do the neurosurgery, appropriately so. We don't have any similar standards in outpatient medicine. Basically, the way it stands right now, it is perfectly legal for anyone in this room, to hire a physician to rubber stamp the purchase and oversight of a laser, to look up how to run the laser on the internet, or take a weekend course and declare themselves to be a laser expert, and then open their doors to the public. And people do not realize that this is what's happening. This bill will absolutely change that. Hopefully it will help reduce complications. Frankly, we're concerned that the complications we see today are just the tip of the iceberg. We know that these are challenging economic times, and some individuals may see getting into the laser business as a way to reap profits at the expense of patient safety. We're not attempting to restrict trade or access. This bill does not restrict any qualified and experienced physician in any specialty from using a laser in his or her practice and delegating appropriately. You will undoubtedly hear anecdotes or predictions today that this bill will reduce competition and will adversely affect business. I don't have any data to refute or to support that. But in one way, I do hope that it does reduce my business to some extent. I hope that in the future, my practice is less involved in taking care of the complications from inappropriate laser use. So I respectfully ask for your consideration. I appreciate you taking the time to hear me despite my lack of adequate voice today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Good. Why don't we proceed to the other testifier, and then we'll go to the question. Representative Murphy, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to the testifier on this point. I want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly, that your license as a physician and your license would allow you to perform procedures using a laser.
Yes.
Despite in the current scheme, despite
yes.
specialized training.
Right.
And that you are suggesting that the credentialing process is another tool used to demonstrate qualifications within facilities. Is that correct?
The credentialing process only applies to hospitals and surgeries, outpatient surgery facilities that go through credentialing. There's no similar policy to apply to outpatient clinics.
And so we're not suggesting that we should change your scope of practice, your licensure law.
No.
Okay, thank you.
No.
Are there additional questions for Representative Bunn?
Thank you, Mr. Sal. I just want to, in the current situation where the physicians are the only ones who can purchase the lasers, you mentioned they don't have, once the purchase is done, they don't have to be there, they don't have to provide all that. But what is their liability?
They're liable if anything bad happens.
Okay.
They don't have to physically be present at all. They never have to step foot in the facility. They don't even have to be licensed in the state of Minnesota.
But it's their malpractice and
exactly.
that is the bottom line.
That is correct.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Can you have the next testifier? Susan Olson and state your name.
Susan
Olson.
Olson.
Okay. State your name for the record and may proceed.
Would it be okay if Dr. Jenkins goes first?
Sure. Dr. Jenkins.
I'm Dr. Scott Jenkins. I'm a board-certified plastic surgeon, and I have worked for the past 29 years, recently retiring from an active surgical practice where I treated trauma, reconstructive surgery, microsurgery, replantation, and cosmetic surgery. For the past 4 years, I've been the medical director of several spas, several aesthetic spas. I want to thank you, Chairman Powell, and the members of the committee for allowing us to speak today. I represent a coalition of called the Minnesota Association for Aesthetic Safety, and it's comprised of physicians, nurses, estheticians, electrologists, and medical spas. We formed our organization to establish standards for the care and safety of the clients who seek aesthetic treatments of a wide variety. When we heard that the dermatologists were seeking legislation for laser regulation to improve laser safety, we were excited to meet with them to work on what we thought would be a method to establish safety standards. We offered to work together on this project, but unfortunately our offer was rejected, as they stated they had no desire to compromise in any way on their proposed bill. I have to admit I was apprehensive about the project of legislating medical care. Many of the points that Dr. Smith made regarding certification are true. In fact, the American Board of Medical Specialties does not currently recognize a specialty devoted to laser. And although it is also true that if you get privileges at a hospital outpatient surgery center for laser, they have to basically use their own judgment as to whether or not your training was adequate. So there is some confusion as regarding as who, in fact, is best able to operate a laser. But I realize in a sense that this is somewhat of a false issue. The aesthetic spas are in no way involved in the diagnosis of medical problems. None of these, if they do, then they should not, and we agree totally that an aesthetic spa does not make a claim to the public that patients can come in and have their diseases, conditions, anything diagnosed.
Sorry, Dr. Jenkins. I just had you here list on the opponent's side.
I am.
Okay. I'm sorry we went ahead. I was hoping to get all the proponents in first.
Oh, I didn't know there were more, sorry.
Representative Root, are there any more? Or? Right, I have Susan Olson and Irma Wallander.
Oh, should I?
Why don't we take a break on your piece,
okay,
and we'll have you back?
That's fine.
I'm sorry for the confusion.
Right.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Go ahead. State your name for the record.
My name is Susan Olson. I'm a registered nurse, and I have been involved in working with laser programs and laser technologies for about 22 years. When I left Abbott Northwestern Hospital 2 years ago, I was the director of the cosmetic care program, along with orthopedics and spine. I have watched over these 20 years the development of technology and am here today to verify or validate that physician oversight is a must with these technologies. The technologies are probably much more friendly today than they were even 10 years ago. But to be able to understand the energy, the interaction with the tissue, and what it's doing to the patient takes an extreme amount of training and expertise. because of my position, I've had the opportunity to work with experts in this field, from neurosurgeons, orthopedics, gynecology, and dermatologists and plastic surgeons. And in every one of those specialties, what I see is the physician leadership and what he brings to the table with his background as really being directive to the care and safety of every single patient.
Okay, thank you. Questions for the testifier? Representative Murphy?
Anxious to hear, coming over to find out when we were doing the questions. So.
Seems like everyone's asking, so just go ahead.
So, eons ago, when I practiced in the operating room, we were on the frontier of lasers and laser therapy.
I'm there with you.
And at that time, there wasn't really a lot of standardized training for any of the practitioners. I think we got a CO2 laser at the University of Minnesota, and I think there was a registered nurse who had gone and gotten some training, and she was participating in the training for the nurses, for the physicians. And I know people were going out of the facility to get training, but they were also doing training in the facility. So So I'm wondering if you can help us understand how the training has evolved over time, and if you can share a little bit about, you know, the bill has a lot of, you know, it sort of talks about delegated medical roles, and it talks about who can do what, and I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit about the current state of practice to help us understand who's doing what, where. Thanks.
Okay, I'm going to just trickle back a minute to eons ago when the lasers were first coming into the hospitals, and that's exactly where they came. At Abbott Northwestern Hospital, and that's what I can speak to because we had a pioneer laser program there, and because no one did have the education, we had a department that provided the education. We would do training seminars on the weekends for physicians. They would come from all over the country. We would do physics, safety. We would do labs where they would, you know, have the opportunity to have the hands-on. As a component and complement to that, in our facility, we had laser safety technicians. And we had a laser team that was comprised mostly of nurses and some surgical technicians who went through our training protocol and, you know, were supervised and were never left to be a part of any procedure until we felt that they were ready. So that was historically where we came from. Today, I am working not in the hospital, but in an outpatient setting like we're talking about today. And at our facility, we do have non-physicians who are medically directed doing some of the procedures that we do. I think the expertise of our least senior person is 5 to 7 years. So these people have years and years of experience, and in our facility, they work hand-in-hand after their initial didactic training with the physician to be able to just be supervised and watched, evaluated, and directed in the treatments that we have. We have a medical director who is on site 2 to 3 days a week. We have 2 other physicians that are there consistently throughout every day that we practice. We do a lot of research at our facility, so that entitles the fact that, you know, probably on a bi-weekly timetable, we have new technology coming into our facility all the time, and with every one of those lasers or different kinds of technology that we have, the first thing that happens is the training. None of our procedures are delegated to non-physicians until we have gotten to a point where we feel that we are understanding the technology, understanding the tissue interaction, and knowing what the outcomes are going to be for the patient. And that's the standard of care and operation that we have in our facility today.
Ms. Olson, I just want to get to maybe even closer. Can anyone who fits this description just open up a shop without having to go through the training? Or
they can.
So they could technically go to the mall and open up a shop and start operating tomorrow.
The only piece that they, like to say, a non-medical person would need to have help with is buying a laser, which in most of the lasers that we're talking about are class 4 medical devices, and a physician does need to purchase that technology. But then what that physician does with the technology is certainly up to him.
So there's currently no regulation to say you need minimum requirement to train this and that?
To the best of my knowledge, that's correct.
Okay. Wallander? Ms. Wallander?
Marina Wallander. I'm the research director at Dr. Zellick's cell skin and laser specialist. I work with Susan Olson. I'm here for moral support.
Okay. Very good. Are there additional questions from the members? Okay. Rep. Zimbun.
This is the end of our proponents. So anything to the proponents generally?
Yep.
Okay. In terms of what we're usually looking for here, and you've given some anecdotal evidence and some clinic-based evidence of, you know, physicians seeing the horrible cases that come in where things have gone awry or improper diagnosis and all that. In terms of, you know, regulating at the state level, though, we look for, you know, large bodies of evidence, preferably statistically relevant. To do that, we would need to know what year these treatments started occurring in our state, how long has this been going on under the current regime, including in these, you know, spa-type settings, and all other settings. You know, what evidence do we have on the number of incidences of harm and the types of harm that were done? What current, and if the Department of Health is in the room, and I'm not seeing him, so I hope they're still here, what current process there is for reporting adverse outcomes for any of these treatments in any of the settings? Who does that reporting go to, and what data do we have on that? And so those are kind of the baseline information we need here, typically, to make these kinds of decisions when we're going, particularly when we're going from a kind of unregulated almost entirely to, you know, full-blown regulation of some kind. We need that because we don't want to work on anecdotes or small samples. So if any of you could address those issues, particularly start with the time of when these laser treatments started to become available in our state and how long it's been going under the current regime.
I'll start with our experience at Northwestern Hospital. I believe that we had our first hair removal laser in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at probably about a 12-year. With regard to reporting, when you're in a hospital setting, the reporting of any accident occurrence is mandated. The difficulty with that reporting process, when you move that to an outpatient area, is the same guidelines are not mandated. So I think I'll let you go first.
Ms. Perkins-Smith.
Hi.
Dr. Perkins-Smith.
Hi. In specific response to your question, lasers have been in the state of Minnesota initially since their invention in the early 1980s. Actually, the first laser was invented in 1959, but they didn't really proliferate until the early 1980s, which was when I was a resident so many years ago. The publications initially were anecdotal, and as Ms. Elgin already said, a lot of these things go unreported. In the last few years, nationally, physicians of all specialties have made an effort to report these complications, and I included specific results in the articles that I gave you. We do not have any Minnesota-specific data. That data is just not out there. And I will tell you, in addition to things in the outpatient setting not getting reported, a lot of these patients, they're embarrassed. We're an interesting breed of Minnesotans. We want to look our best, but we're often ashamed to confess that we've had anything aesthetic or cosmetic done. And so a lot of times a person who's had a complication kind of blames themselves, well, I was stupid for showing up anyway, which is sad but true. So there aren't a lot of lawsuits and there aren't a lot of reports, but they're out there. This is why we're here today.
Rep. Zimbun.
Could you narrow down for me a little bit what year the, you know, we think there's been the big growth in
complications?
Big growth in use of the lasers in clinics that are more cosmetically oriented for hair removal and these other kinds of things, with kind of less medical model oriented.
Well, I'd say there's been an explosion in the last 5 years, perhaps the last 5 to 10, but especially the last 5. And it's interesting, that's, I think, one of the reasons we're seeing most of the complications with hair reduction. Not that that laser is intrinsically more dangerous than others, it's just that the procedure has proliferated to an exponential degree in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, does the health department or any of our state agencies that might be present still have any knowledge of, whether it's to them or through the Better Business Bureau or anything else, as to whether we're receiving reporting of these incidents or if they're going to county levels or any other part of the system? Do we have no one left in the room? He left. Okay. Okay.
Well, representative,
yeah.
Mr.
Kess,
the department did leave, but they didn't mention to me that. They would be happy to get back to you with that information in the committee.
Dr. Britton Smith.
Thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity. This bill is a major compromise for the Minnesota Dermatologic Society. Our national organizations have white papers that indicate that we recommend that all patients are seen by a physician and a diagnosis made prior to laser procedure, and that all laser procedures, when delegated, are accompanied by 100% physician on-site supervision. That's our standard. So when we first wrote this bill, it was much more strict. We did meet with the Aesthetic Society, and we did come together. And what we have today is a compromise, and it's a major compromise for us. It is absolutely not perfect, and we recognize that. But this is going to become a much bigger problem in the near future, and if we don't do something now, this is simply the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. I think you're right. Right now, we don't have any regulations.
There's nothing.
And this is minimum.
Mm-hmm.
These are machines that could dramatically impact your health and hurt the public. And so we want at least folks to get minimum training. So thank you for Ruffin Bunn, and then we'll move to the opponent.
Thank you for your time. The author or the testifier, can you clarify for us under the legislation who determines whether the individual receiving the training is now qualified? Who or what body?
Representative Root or Ms. Dr. Smith?
Representative Bunn, the supervising physician.
Mm-hmm. Representative Bunn.
I'm sorry. A minute. Let me ask the doctor answer that.
Okay.
I had that wrong.
Dr. Perkins.
I apologize. We do have some specifics in the bill that indicate this will be ultimately overseen by the Board of Medical Practice, including setting some minimal educational requirements and continuing medical education. Mm-hmm. It's a medical device, and we thought that was the appropriate place for oversight and supervision.
Okay.
Just one comment on that, and I would have to explore it further, but I think typically, you know, it's the state that decides when people are qualified or not for the profession, and you know, once they're licensed and legislated. I believe this is a bit different structure than we historically have dealt with in this, if I'm not wrong, but I'd have to look into that further because I'm not knowledgeable enough on it. And there's even possibly some constitutional issues around that. So there's some issues about who really has the authority to regulate people in terms of the professional. Well, I think we can work, through statutes and how we do that, and so I have to look into that.
Right now, physicians have the legal authority to delegate medical procedures to whom they see fit. That is legally a statute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good. Did you want to license them, Representative Bunn? We could, we could do that. Anyway. We'll proceed to the opponents, and we have Dr. Jenkins, Kelly Fredrickson, Lee McGrath, Susan Lossing.
Hi. I forgot I wanted to also thank Representative Ruder for initiating this. We are in agreement that some regulation is necessary for the industry. To address some of the comments made before in terms of the complication rate, it is difficult to come by numbers because, again...
Oh, sorry, doctor, you have to restate your name.
Dr. Scott Jenkins.
In the future, when folks are listening, they know that it's you.
Certainly. Dr. Scott Jenkins speaking again. There is an article published in one of the magazines from the Laser Society that actually just looked at 1,637 odd patients treated for hair removal and found a 0.2% rate of complications. That is to say adverse events, and included in that adverse events category were non-permanent injuries that would resolve without treatment. So that gives you some idea of the numbers. We're not arguing that no laser can cause any damage to anyone. That's far from it. That's why we formed our organization. We, too, wish there to be some regulation that prevents the use of a laser by an untrained person in a way that's damaging to patients. The way medicine works and always has worked is, and it works in the laser industry still, if you argue imperfectly, A doctor still has to be associated with a laser. You can't buy one. You can't sell one. It's illegal to own and operate a laser without a physician involved. If there's an untoward event as a result of the use of that laser or the way that they delegate it, it falls to the doctor in a malpractice case where they would suffer the consequences, just like all of the rest of medicine. So the notion of regulating a certain part of medicine is a little bit uncomfortable, since those are the rules of the road for all the rest of medicine. You know, nevertheless, you know, we're understanding this is a somewhat special category. But that is the recourse. Recourse is the physician who's associated with that laser pays the price in a malpractice lawsuit, and things happen as a result of that. To continue with what we were saying before, or what I was saying before, therefore we agree that a physician has to be involved because some of these treatments are in fact complex, and judgment by physicians are required to rule out treatments that are either unsafe or do not work in the spa setting. The key difference here is, again, the spas are not claiming to, nor do they wish to, diagnose or treat medical diseases. They have one goal, and that is to make people's appearance look better. That's what it's about. And we would agree to legislation, if you so choose, to actually limit the spa's use of lasers to that and only that function. So that one of the main things differentiating treatments at spas, therefore, is that the risk for any permanent complication is consistently minimized as an unacceptable outcome. Whereas in a medical condition, often the required treatment has a known complication rate that you simply have to accept in the process of treating the disease. That's a fairly big difference. Scientific data I just mentioned to you is sparse, but again, a 0.2% rate at least gives you some idea of the problem. I personally have been a spa director now for four years at several spas. We've yet to have an adverse outcome that I know of. I'm not saying there aren't any. They may be patients, as Dr. Smith said. We had a complication, didn't come in. That's typical of medicine. As a plastic surgeon, that was true. You'd have patients who simply didn't come back and complain about things because either they didn't think them significant enough or for whatever reason. So reporting is somewhat difficult.
Dr. Jenkins, you say you supervise some spas.
Yes, I do.
Although the folks that you supervise, did they get some training on how to operate those lasers?
Many of them have been operating lasers for 20 years. And yes, they have had training, significant training. The problem is, in terms of certification for training for non-physicians, is it's not, in fact, regulated. I have gone to the Board of Cosmetology in the state of Minnesota, addressed this problem, asked them to work with me to create a training program for estheticians where they get a laser certification that would solve many of these issues. So that's the way we want to solve the problem. Instead of dumping it on the Board of Medical Practice, I talked to Dick Ulz over there, and he said, we don't want that job. We don't want to regulate this industry.
The second part of my question is, can someone that might not be associated with your spa open one up without the training and continue and start practicing?
Yes, and that's why we formed an organization. We're not objecting to tuning this up. We're not. We're not objecting to the notion that we, too, would like to have training better qualified, more certification with identifiable degrees and certificates to allow people to use lasers. We're not objecting to that.
So you would like some regulation?
We would love that.
Okay.
That's not the issue at all. We're not objecting to that at all. It's the type of regulation. All right. So even though the safety risks are fairly minimal in this industry, she can show you scary pictures and everyone can show you. We don't know where those scary pictures came from. We don't know if those were patients treated by dermatologists and then referred to another dermatologist. But this bill, unfortunately, is the current one, the one that's in front of us, the compromise bill, as they say, is really more about language that is set out to destroy the spa industry, which would just so happen to force all the patients they currently treat to have to go to the dermatologist, and without competition, those costs can only go up. As it is, no spa services are covered by insurance. They have no cost burden on the healthcare budget. If the industry were monopolized by physicians, then there are inevitably going to be clever ways to transfer some of those costs to the healthcare industry. We don't support that. Another theme running through the current bill is that there's an attempt to turn back the clock on beneficial trends in the medical care industry. A historical review of medicine shows that there's a relentless trend towards packaging skill sets in specific training types, training personnel to do those skill sets, and then offering them to the system at large for a lower price. That's what physician's assistants, nurse practitioners, nurses, estheticians, that's what all their training is about. The transition, so many of these practitioners, the ones that I supervise, have more experience with lasers than physicians, who can do it really, as Dr. Smith noted, without any training, simply because they're a physician. We wouldn't mind changing that so that a medical direction has to be by physicians who, are in fact, have training in lasers. I would agree to the notion that, for instance, I have laser privileges at a hospital. That and my training qualify me to be a medical director. I would agree to that, that the person who's a medical director for any spa or any situation where laser being used has to have laser privileges in a facility, or at least training adequate to be a medical director. Our proposals encourage vigilant supervision to maximize both fine outcomes and cost effectiveness. Many of our clients come to us for aesthetic, not medical treatments, because they either can't get in to see the doctor or they can't afford them. We are working with the Board of Cosmetology, as I said, to establish these training protocols. I've been there to do this. Dr. Smith's group hasn't. They're not interested in actually helping to train estheticians and an outside manner so they have certificates that they can carry themselves to any spa that they want and say, hi, I'm trained, here's my certificate, hire me. Their proposal is no, only the physician in the facility that's there can determine whether or not the person working for them is adequately trained. We're working at the Minnesota Nursing Association to establish training and supervising protocols for nurse injectors, where the dermatologist group does neither and in fact rejects proposals for us to add this to the bill. To add nurse injectors, which is also happening at a spot, people who inject Botox and fillers. That's already current standard of practice in the United States. We just want to put that in the bill and recognize it. They refuse, say that it doesn't belong there. It just so happens that if a spot couldn't have nurse injectors, that would also hurt their business. I've been supervising spots for 4 years now, and before retiring from active surgical practice, I performed laser treatments, Botox and fillers on a frequent basis. I'm very comfortable with my ability to train and oversee treatments offered and performed in the spas. I don't own a spa, nor do I have a financial interest in them. Frankly, I kind of resent someone telling me how to do my job in terms of supervision. I take responsibility very seriously. When you look at surgical training, one of the things that's drummed into us relentlessly is we have to take responsibility. Surgeons, however, are kind of team players. We have to collaborate. As patients get sicker and sicker, you have to allow more and more people on the team to join in and work as a group to solve the problem. And so that's kind of our model for solving this problem, not having the doctor be in charge to know everything and to actually financially benefit from all the things that occur. Therefore, we'll continue to offer our help to draft the legislation to ensure safety in the aesthetic industry while allowing it to flourish. Today, there are hundreds of spas offering these services at competitive prices in a safe and comfortable environment. These businesses will go out of business, and thousands of people will literally lose their jobs if, in fact, this bill is passed. Because the requirements are such that having a physician, they say, well, just hire a doctor to be there half the time. Doctor doesn't have to be there half the time. They've even accepted the notion that a doctor can be there half the time. Well, if there was something that could happen in the spa that required physician attention now, it's so serious that it needs attention now, not having the patient come back, not having the patient review or the physician review that case, but now, then why wouldn't it be 100? She says, okay, we'll go for 100. But a spa can't hire a physician to sit there and essentially do nothing. They're operating on a shoestring budget. These are mom-and-pop operations, mostly owned by women. They cannot afford to have a physician sit there and really not do much. If the physician does the service with them, the price has to go up. So the whole idea is delegation at a cheaper price. And delegation can be done cheaper. Any questions?
Are there Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I think you're making an interesting case and something that we need to contemplate. And as healthcare changes in America, and we see sort of the intersection between what we consider clearly therapeutic medicine secure,
yes.
And the evolution of how to describe this?
Aesthetic medicine.
Aesthetic medicine. There you go. And the natural medicine. It is really tugging on, I think, our frame of how we look at these issues and how we assure the safe delivery of, an invasive tool or technique. And I think this is an issue, it's intriguing to me. And I am so glad that Representative Root has brought this bill forward, because I think it is shedding light, no pun intended,
on an area that we need to pay particular attention to if our goal is to make sure the public are safe. And I'm not quite sure where I rest in terms of what is the right path forward, but I think this is a very important discussion for Minnesota. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Rood.
Another point, excuse me, just one second that I really should make again is that we were in agreement on the notion there's a difference between what's called an ablative laser and a non-ablative laser. One of them is designed to destroy tissue, cause injury, and then have a controlled healing process where an improvement occurs. A non-ablative laser is intended not to do those injuries. We were in agreement that a physician only should be using an ablative laser. We're not out here saying that anybody can use a tool that can burn a hole in you. That's not what it's about. But non-ablative lasers can be supervised and don't need to be used by physicians. That's common practice throughout the country. It's reasonable. It can be supervised and done just as safely.
Dr. Jenkins, in your testimony, you said these facilities will have to hire a doctor to just sit there.
Correct.
Are we talking to about 4.4, where it talks about supervision in there?
Right, we've come to a point in this particular bill where they're saying a physician should be there once a week. The time that I spend in the spa, I spend more than that amount of time. But it is my judgment. Okay? And so in this case, yes, if the bill goes through as passed where somebody has to be there, I don't even know what a day means. Is that a 4-hour day, an 8-hour day, show up once a week? I don't know. I'm a little worried about legislating how much supervision I need, but I could live with one day a week better than I could live with half the time, which is where we started.
So your comment was not, because if you, your comment was not to hire a physician to sit there, and it's not true when you actually read the whole...
No, in this bill, but as Dr. Smith said, their intention...
So you're talking 100%. About some other bill.
Well, it's their goal, what they think is the correct way to do this.
Got it.
I'm addressing that.
Okay.
They're saying
so it wasn't on
100% of the time, and I'm saying that would be impossible.
So this bill doesn't say they have to sit there
correct.
For the whole day.
Correct.
Got it. Okay, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Jenkins, could you, in your clinics that you have, do you do other procedures outside of the use of lasers that would also be performed by a dermatologist in a hospital or clinic setting?
None of what's done in the spa would be done in a hospital or an outpatient surgery setting. None. Some of them would be done in a dermatologist's office.
Could you give some examples of that?
Well, our services offered in a spa would include laser hair removal, injection of Botox and fillers, facials, peels, mild peels, facial peels. Makeup consulting, massage, and some of them.
That's indeed.
So, Dr. Jenkins, I think that this is a very the use of the laser as a medical tool that the public generally sees as that as something that would be delivered by a trained medical professional. However, a makeup consultant probably would not. There's probably other services, such as you pointed out, with injections, chemical peels, and other services performed in spas that the public would generally feel or believe would be administered by trained medical professionals, if not physicians. And that, I think, is kind of what the bill is trying to get at, is not just safety, but also public intent or what the public expects in terms of these treatments. So I think that we had a bill last week talking about regulating tattoo artists and getting down to their sink size and regulating what those things are. Now, if we want to have the tattoo removed, we'd come to your clinic, and so we want to regulate one and not the other. So I think it's kind of
actually you wouldn't. I mean, a spa doesn't do tattoo removal. I think it's hard for you to understand the technology. I mean, it's helpful.
I understand, Dr. Jenkins, you're
as representative,
a professional, and I'm not. I'm the legislator.
But Representative Rood has gone to a spa and actually had the chance to see. I'm sorry?
You have to go through the chair.
Oh, yeah.
So, Representative Dean, are you done? Or with your question?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Dr. Jenkins, you may respond.
I'm sorry. I really didn't mean to interrupt you. Representative Rood, it's hard. It really is. It's hard to know what these lasers do, and you imagine them being as these fierce machines that burn holes in steel. the non-ablative lasers that we're talking about, it really helps to see one. And you know, we could bring one if you wanted to see what it's like. Representative Root has gone to a spa and actually seen what a hair removal machine looks like. I don't know if you had a chance to try it out. I have no idea. It's none of my business. but I'm just saying that tattooing is actually more invasive than what we're talking about in terms of a non-ablative laser. You're sticking a needle into the skin through the dead skin, the portion that's not alive. Okay, and a non-ablative laser is not designed to penetrate that deep.
Yeah, okay. All right. Thank you. We have Ms. Fredrickson, Lee McGrath, and Susan Lawson. That's, are they here?
Kim and Sal, I'm Susan Lawson.
Okay.
My name is Susan Lawson. I'm the owner of the Permanent Choice Laser Hair Removal. I have been in business as an electrologist for 19 years. So 10 years ago, I purchased my first laser. Dr. Charles Crutchfield III in Eagan, a dermatologist, helped support me with that. And for 6 years, my staff went into his clinic and did all their laser hair removal on skin types 1-5. And so as of the last 4 years, I have Dr. James Wire as my plastic, he's a plastic surgeon. He is my medical director now. My concern for this is that how do we help the girls that have the hair? There's an illness called polycystic ovarian syndrome. 75% of our clients have that. It's facial hair. And the hair, women that have hair in a male pattern, as a man would grow hair. It's a very serious thing, and you know, they've been diagnosed by a physician and referred to a laser center. I had this gal, Michelle, one day, and she came into my office, couldn't look me in the eye, her hair was covering her face, and she was so embarrassed. She had a full beard as a man. And we take the four photos, we watch the progress with them, and I told her she would have a miracle. And 6 weeks later, when she walked in my office, that girl had a ponytail, and I said, Michelle, is that you? I couldn't believe the transformation in her. And that's what concerns me about with this bill. My plastic surgeon, I would have difficulty having him come on site one day a week, being that it would shut down, you know, his practice. We talk on the phone, we have protocols in place, we have training in place, we meet with trainers. I fly trainers in from out of the state to come in and educate the girls. I went to 2 laser schools, one in Florida and one in Denver, many years ago when I first started this. So I've been doing laser removal for 10 years, and I can only say that we have had cases of melanoma. I have not diagnosed it. We've shaved off the back on the man's the hair on the man's back, and I said, this is very, you need to see a physician immediately. We've had 2 people come back and say, thank you for saving my life. They would have never noticed that. They wouldn't have come for laser hair removal. In each of my offices, we have a chart of all the different skin types. We're not diagnosing. We're saying, that looks interesting. Please go seek medical attention. And so in that case, my biggest concern is Dr. Crutchfield had me laser in his clinic, and he called me one day and said, come in and do my services. I don't know how to run this thing. So I did. I ran in there, and we did my staff. Came in, who also went to the schools and had training and certification. He made sure all the guidelines were there, and we did his treatment in his clinic in Eagan. And I thank God for Dr. Crutchfield because he gave me my start, because I saw a need out there that as an electrologist, I cannot compete with what the laser can do. The laser is phenomenal. We see miracles, and like I said, we have pictures to prove it.
Ms. Lawson, did I hear you correct that the doctor who's supervising didn't know how to use the equipment?
In the year 2000, yes.
He did not know how to use
it. He did not know how to use it. And we
he
came in.
Did regulate make him.
You know what?
But he's a dermatologist.
Because I went to 2 laser schools, and when you're working with skin type 5, you have to be very careful. And again, without the proper training, and that's what we're concerned about. But having a doctor on site would be very difficult due to the fact it's going to cost me more money. And another thing I want to impress is that we have people right now that are calling and saying, I'm on treatment number 3, and if you understand the cycle of hair growth, you need 6 treatments 6 to 8 weeks apart. We have people calling right now saying, I have to cancel my appointment, I've lost my job, I can't afford it. And I have that opportunity right now to say, what can you afford? Can you afford $50? Can you afford $25? Because I know what it's like to have hair on your face. I know what it's like to have my grandma shave. I used to watch Grandma Shave, and I was going to look just like her. So I found the answer, and I can't believe. This isn't about money for me. It's about making girls feel good about themselves and literally changing their demeanor and who they are and seeing that smile on their face. And I would hate to see this law, having a doctor on site so regular, I don't know how I could give them the discount that I do to help bless them and to make them feel good about themselves. Because when you have this problem, it's debilitating.
Are there questions for the testifier? Okay, thank you. We have Kelly Fredrickson. And then we're pretty close to 5 minutes, and we'll proceed to...
I'm Kelly Fredrickson. I'm an RN, and I work at Riggins Med Spa, and I'm also a RN at Children's Hospital of Minnesota for the last 25 years. This bill, as Dr. Jenkins said, is very, very good in regards to the part about specific training and things of that issue and keeping up your competencies. What I want to speak to is that every time I saw a version of the bill, it bothered me more and more because it was not even congruent with statute around the Nurse Practice Act. In the Nurse Practice Act, advanced practice nurses are defined under licensures and take on, just like a physician, that their scope of practice staying within it. RNs have a scope of practice. They need to stay within it or we risk losing our licensure. There's still, I didn't believe any phase of it that I've seen, and I've seen many versions, had the right to describe what was already set up in the statute around the Nurse Practice Act. And that's what bothers me the most about it, is that, as Dr. Jenkins said, he has licensure, that he takes on the responsibility of delegation. I take on the responsibility that I'm not delegated something that's not out of my scope of practice. Things we mentioned, injections there, that's what brought me to this field, was because I'm an IV nurse at Children's. And the injections is something I like to do. I'm certified nationally by the American Aesthetic Nurses. There's a strong American Nursing Association that is working to also uplift the regulations around lasers and aesthetic practices. I just don't want to see a bill that is lowering the autonomy of nursing, advanced practice nurses, and RN nurses that already we are regulated already. We take that on. I take patient safety very seriously. And that's part of the bill that I would hate to see it pass beyond the stage with that content still in there. Because I believe that then we'll be digging ourselves out of a hole that nursing has been digging themselves for years. And we're kind of getting up there, and I would like to stay there. Thank you for your time.
Are there questions for the testifier? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Ms. Fredrickson. It's a funny point that you bring up about the accepting delegation, because I think for nurses, and I know this from my own experience, we're so acutely aware of what it is that we do and what we aren't willing to do because we aren't prepared to do it, right? And I think in our world of public policy making, that point is not often acknowledged. And as we, and I was talking with Representative Root about the draft legislation, I think that clearly, some of the definitions and the way they're worded maybe seem just a little out of context with the way that the current statutes are drafted, and that's something that I know Representative Root is committed to working on. So am I.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. Representative Root?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think somebody from the Board of Nursing just want to speak to that point. And I just want to say that is the advantage of having something introduced and on the web and having the public eyes on something as we work through it as a legislature. That's sometimes what we do here. We put something forward knowing that there's controversy. That's okay, because this is where we have the public debate. So I just want to, if I can, Mr. Chair, sure. Have the board speak.
State your name for the record.
My name is Shirley Brook, and I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Nursing, and this is the first time I've seen the bill this morning, and I hope I can do a little better job speaking to it than I did the other evening with you on another bill. I'm expressing my concern at just as Representative Murphy has regarding the definitions, especially advanced medical practitioner, including advanced practice nurses, because they are currently defined as nurses in the Nurse Practice Act. I've talked with Representative Root about this also, and she has indicated that they are aware of that and are certainly looking at it. As to the public safety issue, I would tell you that the Board of Nursing gets many calls regarding this particular issue, and so I, again, appreciate the fact that it's been brought forward, because I do believe it needs clarification in terms of who's able to do the procedures and what kind of education and training they need to have, and so I, again, appreciate Representative Rood bringing it forward, as well as the other individuals who have an interest in it. In fact, Rob Leach, the Executive Director of the Board of Medical Practice, and Gina Stouse, the Executive Director of the Board of Cosmetology, and I have actually talked about this and identified it as a problem, one that needs to be addressed probably by all of our boards, and I just really would appreciate the opportunity to do that. Thank you.
Okay, a closing remark, Representative
Rood. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think it's fair to say that there's a lot of passion on this issue. And I really do believe that all the people involved here have the patient's best interests at heart. And I think when we keep the patient in the center of the discussion, we're going to come up with the right answer for this. It's been a very interesting debate. I mean, watching the faces of the members, I mean, Pete, it's intriguing. And I appreciate all the people who came down here today. I know many of you are business owners, and I appreciate that you took time out of your schedule to be here today. So I'm glad we had the public hearing. I am hopeful that the dialogue will continue and that this will move forward. But members, I would move that we lay this on the table so we can continue this conversation.
Okay, bill's laid on the table. Oh, Representative Rue, we do have to vote on your motion. No, we did not. Representative Rue moves that he laid this bill on the table. All those signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The ayes have it. Bill is laid on the table. And we're going to take a 5-minute recess in 3:56, the DFL members. Bye. I'm going to have to do my food. Aaron Murphy. Is he looking for us? Okay, I'm going to move House File 535, for reconsideration. And my intention is to have the 535 as the vehicle bill for the licensing policy omnibus bill. So we're going to have to vote on the reconsideration. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Carrie? The chair moves that House File 535 be recommended, passed, and re-referred to the Committee on Health Care and Human Service Policy and Oversight. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to incorporate the DE1 amendment. I want folks to look at it.
Have it.
Okay, I'm going to move the DE1 amendment to the House File 535.
Yeah. Can you hold on for one moment because I don't find a DE1.
Yeah,
I don't
have
it. The really big one.
Oh, it's an E. Sorry, I got it.
Nope.
Oh, I have 1,000 of them. I have 2. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Oh, sorry.
Okay,
yeah.
Before we vote on the DE1, I'm going to incorporate the A2, which is essentially what the A2 does is takes out the Article 6, which is the dental hygienist and therapy stuff, dental therapy. What it does is it creates 2 different articles where it just separates the 2 bills out as it passed out in the committee. So I believe you have to vote on... No, we don't have to vote. Vote on the... Okay, we're going to vote on the DE1S Incorporated. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion prevail. Ms. A's, maybe I'll attempt to walk through the bill and then Ms. A's could jump in. I need to get my practice when I get to the floor. Tomorrow. No. Oh, I'm sorry. Before we move, I think Lester Murphy has an amendment. I believe it's a technical amendment. Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, the A8 amendment is an amendment to the legislation that we've already heard in the committee dealing with respiratory therapists. And you'll recall during the testimony that there were some concerns by the sleep techs. And so the respiratory therapists and the sleep technologists and the male have been working feverishly. And this is a result. There is one word that I need to add orally to this.
Okay.
On line point, and again, this is the A8 amendment. On line 1.7, between the word two and the acronym CPAP, add the word non-invasive.
Okay, Representative Murphy just incorporates the non-invasive word after the two and before the CPAP.
And Mr. Chair, members, I think, and I sure do hope that this represents sort of the final resting position for these three groups that have been working through this. They've worked really hard in the last week and a half.
Okay.
So I'd appreciate your support.
Okay. All those in favor of the A8 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Amendment is carried. Motion is carried. I will explain the article, the delete all as amended. I'm just going to change a little bit. The article one is the health board complaint that we heard from the Attorney General. We essentially took out the portion where they had to come back and appeal stuff. And then the Article 2 is ableist provision, the chiropractic provision. This allows the Council on Chiropractic International to approve the residency, I believe. And then Article 3 is Murphy's proposal. Just allows pharmacists to do vaccinate. And then Article 4, also Murphy's proposal, the licensure of respiratory therapists. We had a long debate on that. And then the Article 5 is Kim Norton's physician assistant regulatory as well. Then we took out the Article 6. On the old provision, the Article 7 is the...
When you get that foot page, I'm sorry.
Oh, I don't know. I'm just going through my own notes. So.
Oh.
Saw an article.
Well, it skips around fast. If someone could give us the page number real quick each time you move. Okay, but each time you move. So
69.
Okay.
Okay, we're on Article 7. Represents Thiessen's psychologist. Basically, it just creates an inactive license status for psychologists and modifies the emeritus status. You guys all, I wasn't here when you guys heard that bill, so I heard it was a good bill. Then the Article 8 is Dean's nutritionist provision, and then the 9 and 10 is Abler's social worker. The cleanup bill from the work that we did 2 years ago. And then the new pieces, the OHP and dental therapist was incorporated when we voted on the amendment. So, I want to thank everyone for the good work, and we're going to move this forward to the amended to Thiessen's committee, and we could have some debates there. I prefer that we're probably not going to have testimony from testifiers. I'm going to present the report, and I'm going to allow some short statements and, you know, members to raise their hands at once. So, Representative Norton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I'm pleased to be able to vote for the bill today, but I do want to just, for the record, say I'm not 100% thrilled with everything that's in this bill. And while I'll be voting for it today, I would like to work with the chair and with others on making some changes and perfecting things as we move forward, perhaps in healthcare policy. But I'm pleased to be able to vote for it today.
Okay. All those in favor of the chair renews his motion that House File 535 as amended. Do you recommend a Representative
Bunn? Briefly, Mr. Chair, thank you. I just want to say I underscore what Representative Norton said. I think that while we may not be having testifiers in the next committee, I know that there are many members of the Health and Human Services Policy Committee that have a strong interest in one of the most concerned, the whole dental health issue area. And so I do expect there will be some further discussion in that committee and possibly amendments at that time as well.
I look forward to it. The chair renews his motion that House File 535 be recommended as amended, be recommended passed, and be referred to the Health Human Service Policy and Oversight. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Meeting's adjourned. I think this might be our last meeting unless there's an emergency somewhere. So. Meeting adjourned.